From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The Romans liked it bloody, a fight to the death. We just have our modern gladiators beat their brains out on the field in the NFL, and we love it. Biggest sport in America, even when there's scandal all around. Deflategate, Spygate, domestic abuse, even when Hollywood is coming down on the concussion front. It's the season opener tonight. We're on it this hour, On Point, the blood sport circus of the NFL. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Do you love this game? No matter what, Roger Goodell, punched out wives, spying and soft balls, players losing their minds. Is it just too good to let go? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll talk later in this hour about the movie Concussion with Will Smith and Alec Baldwin. Albert Brooks comes out later this year. Tells the story of Dr. Bennett Omalu, played by Will Smith, who made the first discovery of football-related brain trauma, big trauma, in the NFL in 2002. Here's a clip from the trailer for Concussion.
I found a disease that no one has ever seen. Repetitive head trauma chokes the brain.
The NFL does not want to talk to you.
You turned on the lights and gave their biggest boogeyman a name.
You're going to war with a corporation that owns a day of the week.
They own a day of the week and a whole lot more. We'll look at that. Let's dive in. With me in the studio is Kevin Clark, covers the NFL for the Wall Street Journal. He's in Boston today to cover tonight's season opening game between the Patriots and the Steelers. Kevin Clark, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
And with us from Bristol, Connecticut, is ESPN senior writer Seth Wickersham, co-wrote with ESPN reporter Don Van Natta Jr. the big blowout piece on NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell's reported involvement in Spygate and Deflategate, published Wednesday on ESPN.com. The gist was that Goodell helped cover up Spygate and tried to compensate by coming down very hard on New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady in Deflategate, a four-game suspension now thrown out by a New York judge. Brady plays tonight. Seth Wickersham, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Great to be with you guys.
So can you go straight to the heart of your deal, that four-game suspension for Tom Brady? Everybody's been talking about it for months. It seemed like an awful lot. And what's the case you're making that Goodell did this because he went light on years and years when you report the Patriots were spying on all kinds of games outside team rules?
Well, there was a perception that he went light. And so what happened was that in September 9th, 2007, the Patriots were caught after multiple warnings to stop videotaping opposing signals from the sideline. They were caught doing it. And the investigation that the NFL did is striking compared to the investigation that it did for Deflategate. It was so much more brief. And what happened was that within days of the Patriots getting caught, the commissioner called Bill Belichick, the Patriots coach. They had about a 30-minute phone call. He admitted that they had been doing it for some time. He didn't volunteer too much information, and the commissioner didn't probe very hard. And at the end of it, the next day, the commissioner awarded a historic penalty against the Patriots. Only after there was public outcry the next couple of days did he dispatch three league executives to Foxborough. And once they were there, they found an entire library of material that had been made from a lot of these stolen signals. Some of it wasn't, but a lot of it was. The three executives interviewed three people: Bill Belichick, his right-hand man Ernie Adams, and the director of video operations for the Patriots, Jimmy D. They watched some of the videos that were taken against the rules, not all of them. The commissioner, without watching any of them, ordered them to be destroyed, and the league executive stomped them to pieces in a conference room at the Patriots Stadium, and they left the pieces on the floor for a New England Patriots lawyer to pick up.
You mean literally stomped on them with their feet so nobody could see these illicit game tapes the Patriots had, your reporting, made?
And there was also notes that went with them that they shredded. And that was it, and it was done in 9 days. And
Are you calling that a cover-up? Is that what you're saying?
Well, there was people who did think that it was a cover-up. I think the perception around the league was that he didn't try to find out if the taping had impacted any games or even how many games were taped. And because of that, teams around the NFL, owners, GMs, executives, coaches, were furious because they didn't know if they had been robbed out of glory because of this. And because of that, a lot of conspiracy theories, you know, hatched, and a lot of suspicions about some of the Patriots' behavior throughout the years seen confirmed. And frankly, I don't think, and we mentioned this in our story, I don't think the commissioner did the Patriots any help either by destroying the tapes, because it gave every team license to just, you know, use their wildest conspiracy theories and imaginations about what had happened.
And so you're suggesting, though, that when we had this four-game suspension for Tom Brady, now thrown out, but that was Goodell trying to, like, even the scale somehow come back really hard this time?
So owners were furious that they felt like that he didn't do an investigation on what the actual impact of these tapes were. So later on that year, Senator Arlen Specter from Philadelphia, the late senator, is really interested in this. He writes two letters to Goodell. Goodell doesn't respond. Only after an offhand conversation with the New York Times ends up turning into a story does Goodell respond. And the Specter, the senator was asking the questions that the league, frankly, had not asked, which was, did this impact a game? How many people were interviewed? How many games were taped? And he brought in the commissioner and Jeff Pasch, who's the league general counsel, for a interview. He found the commissioner. We found that the notes of these meetings,
yeah,
for the first time, they were in Senator Specter's library. We also interviewed aides who were in the meetings. They found the commissioner very defensive. They found Jeff Pasch, who had actually led the investigation, who offered to resign as this investigation was heating up, the Senate one. They found him very sweaty and squirmy.
Well, wasn't he the one who stomped on the tapes?
Yes.
Okay.
And basically, Goodell said a bunch of things that had contradicted a lot of his public statements. And so Senator Specter believed that there had been a cover-up, or at the very least, that he believed that the hard questions to get to the truth of what the 7-year pattern of taping signals meant to games. And so he wanted to open a congressional investigation that would put everybody under oath. By the way, league, aside from this meeting with Senator Specter, the league had completely stonewalled him. Like 25 people that he tried to reach out to around the league with the Patriots and the NFL would not get back to him, definitely wouldn't talk to him. So he wanted to open up an investigation. And Goodell went to great lengths to get this shut down. And one of the things that he did was he called the former head coach of the St. Louis Rams, Mike Martz, who, he had coached the team that lost to the Patriots, that kind of started the Patriots run. There had always been a lot of unfounded suspicions that there was cheating in that game, which have all been not proven to be true. But some New England Patriots staffers witnessed the Rams walkthrough the day before the game. So he calls Mike Martz, who then was the coach, offensive coach for the 49ers, and with a panicked tone says, I need you to release a statement saying that you believe that we did our due diligence. It would be horrible for the league if we're all called under oath and have to testify.
We got to stop this right here. This can't go further. This can't be in a congressional hearing. I mean, he was on, Roger Goodell, commissioner, on your ESPN's Mike and Mike on just Tuesday, and they, off your piece, asked him if there was any connection between Deflategate, the softballs, and the Patriots Spygate situation back in 07. Here's Goodell.
I'm not aware of any connection between the Spygate procedures and the procedures we went through here. We obviously learn from every time we go through any kind of a process, try to improve it, get better at it, but there's no connection in my mind to the two incidents.
I don't know how to interpret that exactly. Seth Wickersham and more have got Roger Goodell in the hot seat again. I mean, Kevin Clark with Wall Street Journal with me in the studio, is Seth describing here this attorney for the NFL is sweaty and squirmy. The NFL has been sweaty and squirmy so much this year, maybe more than ever, and yet I don't see any hit to their popularity. I don't see any hit to their revenues. It was $12 billion or something like that. It just seems to roll on no matter what.
And rising. I think one of the things the NFL has realized is there's a difference between the news cycle, which is what people are saying that day or that week, and actual consumer habits, quite frankly. And I think that the Ray Rice scandal last year, in which Ray Rice obviously was charged with hitting his then-fiancée, Janae Palmer, in an elevator.
Yep. That punching her out.
Yeah, it was real bad. And there his video. It was horrible. And then a couple weeks later, the Seahawks played the Broncos on a Sunday afternoon, and 40 million people watched. You know, the Patriots' fourth preseason game this year, which is the most boring thing you can possibly imagine, was the most watched sporting event, event in general in Boston since the Oscars. And so you just have these things that are in the news cycle, and they basically get ignored by NFL fans who are still going to watch on Sunday. And quite frankly, keeping it in the news cycle, these scandals, Deflategate, owning the headlines in June and July when there are no games, that actually may help the NFL as far as people tuning in tonight, you know, obviously with the Steelers and the Patriots, Tom Brady making his debut since the scandal. It really keeps them at the forefront of American culture.
Seth, you talk about Roger Goodell on the phone, worried about the very future of the NFL itself, but here the money keeps pouring in. Is his job in danger, or is he a hero because they're richer than ever?
Well, really quick, just to address this point that he made on Mike and Mike, he mentioned Spygate is a prior offense in his letter to the Patriots in justifying the punishment for Deflategate. So he made the connection. I don't exactly understand his answer on that, saying that there was no connection there. But because the owners were so angry about the way that he handled Spygate, a lot of them viewed him going hard on the Patriots right now as a makeup call. And I think that solidified his standing with a lot of guys. I mean, Roger Goodell gets beat up a lot. The commissioner, being the commissioner of the NFL, is a difficult job. It's a very complicated job, and there's a lot of different things you have to do. Player conduct and discipline is obviously something he has not done very well. But he's a savvy guy, and he's very smart, and I think that there's a lot of owners who feel glad that he went after that he showed a willingness to go after the Patriots on this one.
And he, like the league, rich as can be. Seth Wickersham has been writing pretty amazing stuff for ESPN. He joins us today from Bristol, Connecticut. You can link to his big story at onpointradio.org. Seth, that's some job on reporting. Thank you very much for being with us for a minute today.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about professional football, the NFL. The scandals, the money, the injuries, and charge that this is the modern gladiator sport. And the future of the man in the middle of it all, Roger Goodell. Kevin Clark with the Wall Street Journal joins me in the studio. He'll be at the season opener tonight at the stadium outside of Boston, Gillette Stadium, where the New England Patriots will take on the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Deflategate, of course, has swirled all around the Patriots. Patriots fans have stood up for Tom Brady, free Tom Brady and all that, judged throughout the four-game suspension. Let's listen back. This is the beginning of the third quarter in that AFC championship game. Patriots and Colts. Game was stopped so referees could take a ball out of play. This may be the moment that Deflategate began.
What's the situation here?
Well, what it looks like is that they still spotted the ball with a kicking ball, waiting for one of the ball guys to come down and give them a regular scrimmage ball.
Okay. Which is a big difference because the kicking balls are not rubbed up near as much as the game balls used by the quarterbacks. They would be slicker with the rain.
Is it a little deal, a big deal? All depends who you ask. Patriots won by a long shot there. It certainly raised questions about Roger Goodell and the kind of punishments that he's meted out on all kinds of fronts that end up being overturned, turned over. Here again this week on Mike and Mike, ESPN, Goodell was asked about his involvement with disciplinary actions against teams and players, how it might change in the future. Here he says he may step out of that a little bit, soften that sentiment some later in the week.
Yes, I am very open to changing my role in that. It's become extremely time-consuming, and I think I have to be focused on a variety of other issues, and that's what I've discussed with many of the owners over the last couple of years. We believe that a discipline officer or some type of a panel that could make at least the initial decision and then a designee of mine on some type of appeal would be a better system.
Patrick Ruby with Vice Sports joins us in a minute. Kevin Clark, here's this commissioner. Is he in any trouble despite all the hoopla with all the money they're making, all the money he's making? Is he in trouble or not?
He's not in trouble from a broad perspective. He's not in trouble as commissioner. What he is in trouble is as a disciplinarian. He has taken on more powers than any commissioner than in the history of American sports, basically. He wanted to be the enforcer. He was on the cover of Time magazine that literally said the enforcer, I think, about 8 years ago. He wanted to be the guy who put order into the game and stopped all these arrests in the offseason, that sort of thing. So he took on this stuff, and now it's starting to bite him. And so I think that he will probably have to relinquish that role. I think Jonathan Kraft, the president of the Patriots, came out a couple weeks ago and said, we need to rethink this whole system. We didn't know how complicated it would be to start for the commissioner who's dealing with TV contracts, sponsorships, all a host of other things. And all of a sudden, he's dealing with domestic violence and trying to figure out what to do with paid leave and stuff like that. And I think that it's just become far too complicated for him because his job is to make money. His job is to win the labor wars when they happen. He does both of those things very well. His one, his biggest weakness, and it's the one that he should, justifiably be grilled on, is the discipline problem. And I think he's being judged on that right now. He's realizing that, and he may just want to step away and appoint a discipline officer who will take the heat for him.
And yet, this integrity of the game issue and the bigger issue, the morality of the game, you start punching your wife out or anybody else, domestic violence and all the rest, has caused huge headaches to the NFL. Of course, last year, NFL suspended Baltimore Raven Ray Rice indefinitely after a second video showed him punching his then-fiancée in the face, seemed to knock her unconscious. Roger Goodell told CBS News' Nora O'Donnell here that he didn't get right to suspending Ray Rice didn't get it right after the first video. He didn't get right to it, but was released. And maybe he should have. Here's that exchange.
Did the NFL drop the ball, or was the NFL willfully ignorant about what was on this tape?
Well, we certainly didn't know what was on the tape, but we have been very open and honest, and I have also from 2 weeks ago when I acknowledged that we didn't get this right. That's my responsibility, and I'm accountable for that.
Doesn't it ultimately end up in his lap, Kevin? I mean, lap, you can have a committee out there or anything else, but in the end, it's the credibility of this league, isn't it, that's on the line?
Yeah, in all these situations. And again, he's the guy that wanted this power. And so it's coming back and in his face. And so, yeah, he's being judged on everything right now. And it's a very hot time to be the commissioner. He's getting a lot of heat. And I just feel like at some point the owners are going to say, enough of this. You're no longer the disciplinarian. It's your job to just make us money. And that's ultimately what will happen.
He could afford to go. Son of a U.S. senator, how much does he make now these days?
The most recent available tax return showed $44 million in salary. That was in 2012, I believe.
Not too shabby. Christy, in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on with Kevin Clark of the Wall Street Journal on the NFL.
Hi. I want to talk about Michael Vick, since no one else does. I think what he did was a felony. He killed at least 7 dogs. He abused and tortured many dogs, and he just gets a slap on the wrist, and then he goes back and plays like he's still, the superstar. So we can't forget what he did to the dogs.
Christy, we've got it. You're not forgetting. Kevin Clark's nodding along.
Yeah, I mean, in a weird way, Vic is one of Goodell's success stories, if you ask him, if you ask the league office. Here's a guy who went to jail, who missed, I think, 2 full seasons, came back on, he was making tens of millions of dollars when he left, came back making, I think, $1 million, paid his dues in jail, but then also came back and had to win his job back in the NFL. Took a couple years. He's gotten a couple chances. He's obviously working his way out of the league now. He's with the Steelers, and this is probably his last stop. But that's a guy who the NFL feels has been rehabilitated and that they used the disciplinary process for good in that situation. He owns dogs as pets now. He is, if you ask him, very, very sorry about this situation. So I know there are many people, there are protesters in Pittsburgh now who are outside games, outside practice, saying don't let this guy on the team. But in the NFL's book, that is a success story, and that's sort of why they say they want to keep the disciplinary process around, because of guys like Vic who are able to re-enter the NFL in such a way.
And then there's this guy. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, who was facing a 4-game suspension, really big, and now he's playing in the season opener tonight. Here was Brady on Sunday speaking to the media for the first time since the Patriots' Super Bowl victory.
It's obviously been a long 7 months for everybody, but I think now the goal is to focus on what my job is and what I need to go out there and do to help our team win. Anything that's happened over the past 7 months, obviously I have a lot of personal feelings, and but I really don't care to share many of those. I really care to think about what I need to do going forward.
Tom Brady, let's go forward. Joe in Boston, you're on the air. What do you say?
Hi, Tom. Hey, just calling. Have a theory that I've thrown around with a few of my friends. I'm not a Patriots fan. I'm a Vikings fan, but I'm very excited for the NFL season to start. And has the thought of it all being it, meaning the Deflategate scandal, all being a part of the soap opera that is the NFL, kind of a conspiracy theory here. Has anyone thought of that or thrown that out for conversation?
Well, what do you mean? That all it's somehow made up or blown up? Sorry, wrong way, but just to keep attention on football year-round?
Yes, exactly. You know, a means to draw people into ESPN in July before the All-Star game for baseball. It's kind of a downtime after the NBA Finals. They just want to get as many people watching the, you know, there's a lot of money in advertising, and ESPN is a 24-hour news network, so it's, a lot of money there.
Joe, let us pick it up. Soft footballs, a league conspiracy, a media conspiracy. What do you say, Kevin?
He is not the only fan with that theory. I've heard that on Twitter and emails that people think that Goodell sort of cooked this whole thing up and made this much bigger than it was in May. And then you have the hearings in June and then you know the appeals and all the dramas coming down in July and August when the NFL is not at the forefront of the news cycle. I don't believe that. I think the NFL has a million ways to get in the news cycle, whether that's pushing the draft back, whether that's, I wrote a story about, them sort of pumping up free agency and making, different little tricks they do, changing dates around. They can find their way to the top of SportsCenter. They didn't need to be in the court system for that. Goodell didn't need to embarrass himself. Goodell may end up losing a lot of power over this. So if this was a conspiracy to get, the NFL in the headlines, it was very poorly executed by Goodell because he's going to end up the loser of it. But no, I think fans do think that a little bit, that this is all some big soap opera. And quite frankly, it works. Who's not going to tune in tonight?
So then you get into issues of two different categories of problem. Well, I don't want to make light of any of these. You've got domestic abuse, people being punched out. Christie calls about the dogs, and it was terrible. Sure. You've got Deflategate and all that, and that goes to what Goodell calls the integrity of the game. But then there's the issue of the actual health of the men on the field, and are they having their brains in effect beaten out here? Are they losing their minds for football? And then you get into ethical issues about what does it mean that many people roar out to support this. A lot of that will be taken up in this film Concussion, comes out later this year with Will Smith, who plays Dr. Bennett Omalu, who first made the discovery of football-related brain trauma in the NFL back in 2002. Now, Al Brooks plays a doctor who helps Dr. Omalu in his fight for the truth about chronic brain injury to get out. Here's a little bit from the trailer of Concussion.
They want you to say you made it all up.
If they continue to deny my work, men continue to die.
Sometimes in life, you're asked to leave it alone. But sometimes you can't.
Just leave it alone. It's the NFL. But men continue to die, says the doctor Will Smith plays in the film. And there we get to the whole, these are our gladiators. This is our blood sport and the issue of ethics. Patrick Ruby joins us now, contributing editor for Vice Sports, joins us from Washington. Patrick Ruby, thank you very much for being with us.
It's great to be here.
You've written pretty critically, and of course a lot of people talk about this, about whether, what has become our number one national sport has at the heart of it a kind of takedown of these big, strong men that can plague them for life, lead to death and a whole lot of suffering, and whether that in itself is ethical. Are we in love with an unethical game?
It's a really tough question to answer. I mean, everybody who is a fan sort of has to answer it for themselves. I can tell you personally, after reporting on this issue for a number of years, after spending time with people who are suffering from football-induced brain damage, from family members of those people, from the widows, wives, sons, daughters, the ripple effect that comes out from this kind of injury. Brain damage really damages who you are, and it damages everything you do and everyone that knows you. After going through that myself and talking to the scientists involved, looking at the science myself, I can't watch the sport anymore. I used to love it. Can't watch it anymore. I know too much. I know too much about how the sausage is made. I know too much about the cost at the other end of it. But again, in terms of the ethics, everyone has to ask that question to themselves. I have an iPhone. some of the stuff in my iPhone may come from questionable places, questionable suppliers. I still have it. So we all have to kind of make those choices. But for me, that choice wasn't that hard to make.
Each must ask it of him or herself, I guess, but we don't say that about everything that's very costly, and especially in terms of life. We don't say that about murder. Well, everyone will decide whether it's okay or not. Let me get a caller right here. Michael in Nashville. Michael, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
I've grown up loving football. Went to a very small high school. Was the captain of my eighth grade team. Made the varsity as a freshman. Gotten written up in a large city paper. But in my next to last game, I'd already earned my letter. The next to last game, before that game, the coach said, I want to see blood on the field. And he didn't mean our blood. He meant the blood of the other people. And that was it for me. I quit the team. I've never followed football since. I don't know if other people have experienced that, but I found that a tremendous disappointment, and that's my comment.
I want to see blood on the field, and Michael said enough for him. I mean, Kevin Clark, how does a society work through something like this? So far, we're embracing this whole hog. $12 billion revenue, that's more than from people watching than any other sport.
By far. And, you know, there was the quote in the Wall Street Journal today from Brian Rolapp, who's essentially the NFL's number two, saying, you know, they haven't seen the news cycle carry over into the watching habits. And until that happens, the NFL is, even though they're acting, even though they're trying to make the game a safer place, they're not under much urgency if people, 40, 50 million people are still going to watch a regular season game on a Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock. So society doesn't seem to be working through it at all. It's the same issue with FIFA, which is, you know, they gave Qatar a World Cup in 2022, and no one's not going to watch, even though there's, you know, huge issues over slave labor or whatever it is.
Building all the stadiums.
Exactly, and, yeah. And so for whatever reason, sports fans have shown over history to not want politics or ethics in their sports. And I think the NFL, for them, it's very fortunate that people aren't asking tough questions from a broad consumer stance. They're just sort of accepting it. And it's, you know, it's journalists, it's certain people who are looking into this, but it's not bleeding into the mainstream. And I think it's a shame that more tough questions aren't being asked.
Patrick Ruby, I mean, how do you interpret that? People don't believe it, that it's that damaging to the players, or they don't care because the spectacle is just too irresistible?
I think there's two things here. I think one, people are good at compartmentalizing. That was something else that was mentioned in the Wall Street Journal today, mm-hmm. One of the other marketing experts that was quoted. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very true. Fans are always able to compartmentalize sort of these bad things that are happening in sports from the sports themselves. Look what we do with sports. We put sports over in the sports page. We give it its own section of the newspaper. We sort of pretend that sports exists separate from the rest of the world, even though we all know it actually doesn't. The second thing I think that goes on here is that you've got this game where these horrible health costs, they're not being felt by the fans directly, and generally not even indirectly. I mean, yes, down the road, look, if you've got a bunch of guys who are brain damaged, who are suffering, that is creating health costs for society. And to the extent that the NFL doesn't pay for them, which it doesn't for the most part, and which its settlement probably isn't going to, we're all going to absorb that cost. But it's kind of like the carbon we're putting in the air. We don't see it right away. We're not paying up front. And when you don't have to do that, it's extremely easy to ignore, make excuses, or just not think about it.
Of course, a lot of these men are still out there. You could take the camera and train it on them. And of course, people do and have done that. But that's not what we see on game day. We see a very exciting athletic spectacle. They have a long tail of costs that come with it. We don't want to watch. We're talking this hour about professional football, the NFL, with Patrick Ruby of Vice Sports, Kevin Clark of the Wall Street Journal. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at WBUR.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about professional football, the scandals, the money, the injuries, and charge that this is the modern gladiator sport. Looking at the future of the man in the middle of it all, Roger Goodell. Season opening game tonight, New England Patriots. They've been in the middle of a lot here. And the Pittsburgh Steelers. Kevin Clark with the Wall Street Journal is with us. He is in Boston to cover the game tonight. Steelers and Patriots. Patrick Ruby joins us from Washington, contributing editor at Vice Sports, who's written rather critically about some of the deeper issues here that go to the damage that the players themselves can suffer in the process of playing the game, to the head in particular, losing their minds. What do you make of the scandals, Deflategate, Spygate, the charges, Ray Rice, Michael Vick, all the rest, and the damage to the players? Is this our modern gladiator sport? Are we as gross as the Romans watching it, or is this different? Is that overblown? We're at 800-423-8255. It all comes out from Hollywood later this year. The film is Concussion. Will Smith plays Dr. Bennett Omalu, who made the first discovery of football-related brain trauma back in 2002. Here he is in the trailer.
Tell the truth.
Maybe we can't handle the truth. Here's the real life Dr. Omalu. This was in 2013 on Frontline from WGBH. After looking at NFL player Mike Webster's brain, Webster, who died at age 50, here's the doctor saying it looked like that of a very old or older man.
If I had not been told his age, I would say he looked like 70. And the retired players would tell you that when they retire from football, life is a struggle, even to get out of bed. So the question we have to ask ourselves really is, what is the human cost?
The human cost. There's a real cost, too, to the NFL. They're in the middle of working out a settlement with a lot of former players here. The NFL Network's chief correspondent, Andrea Kramer, asked Commissioner Roger Goodell about that settlement and why in the settlement, about $1 billion, there was no admission of NFL guilt.
We don't believe there is any guilt here. We don't believe necessarily that this is caused by football, but we all want to do what's right for the players. We want to make the game safer. And what we wanted to do is create that fund that would allow players who are having cognitive diseases, no matter what the cause is not the issue for us. It's to get them help.
Kevin Clark, can you explain this settlement that's being worked out here? They're still in the middle of it, I guess. There's been some challenges to it. It's about $1 billion for how many players and what players?
Basically anyone. And that was the biggest issue when it was denied the first time by the judge in Philadelphia, is that the math didn't add up. The math the NFL was putting forward on how these players would be covered, even if they, even if they didn't have to prove that this was caused by the NFL, whatever it was. So it went back. Now the NFL is basically saying we're going to cover everybody. There'll be awards. I think.
But it's for ex players who show while they're living, or is this for post mortem?
They'll get a baseline test, I believe, and then while they're living, and then they'll be able to show that they are getting worse, basically going forward. And then there are basically awards based on the type of ailment. So I think the original settlement was $1 million for ALS, for instance, and lesser awards for other sort of ailments. So it's very complex. I think there's still a lot of critics out there, Patrick being a very vocal one, of the deal and saying, okay, how could the NFL pay for all of this stuff with basically a settlement that at one point was under $1 billion, which is really nothing to the NFL. And so, look, the NFL got very, very lucky that the players wanted that money now, because they could have had to pay a lot going forward.
Patrick Ruby, is this blood money? Does this make it all right?
Well, that's another ethical question. I mean, I don't think it makes it all right. I mean, look, when you talk about this settlement, first of all, you're talking about a settlement, as I've written, it is designed to only pay out for the most severe cognitive issues. And what I mean by that is the most severe types of dementia that come later in life. It's not dealing with the mood, behavior disorders, the other types of brain damage, this whole spectrum that researchers are seeing as a result of, and sorry, Roger Goodell, as a result of getting hit in the head hard and repetitively, which is inherent to the sport of football. So he can talk about how he doesn't want to be about causation. of course he doesn't. But if you go look at the science, there's a pretty good causal link there. Are all the, you know, has all of it been figured out? Are there other factors? Are there genetic factors? Are there reasons why some people end up okay after playing football and some people don't? Of course, we're still figuring it out. Much is the case, we're still figuring that out when it comes to smoking and lung cancer. Not everybody that smokes get lung cancer, but we know there's a connection there. We know it's not good for you in a lot of ways.
So, I mean, you work for Vice Sports, but we heard you say that as much as you like football, and I do too, I grew up playing it, never tire of telling people I'm the same height and weight as Tom Brady. And the similarity ends there. But you're not watching it anymore. So why is that? When you do watch, or if you watch, are you thinking somewhere on that field right now, some player is losing his family, losing his mind, losing his mood, getting mood disorder, getting ALS, becoming demented over time?
Yes. I mean, I'm basically thinking about the fact that I'm watching people destroy themselves, at least some of them, for my amusement. And that just doesn't settle well with me. I can't do that. Personally, it violates my ethics. As a fan, as someone who is simply trying to be entertained. The other ethical question, this is the one we haven't talked about that's really important, and this gets into the business side of football and what Kevin talked about earlier about how, well, everything's fine, the NFL is making a lot of money, these things are sort of compartmentalized and disconnected. Well, the place where there's a big connection ethically is maybe not at the NFL level, but at the other levels of football, the seed corn of the NFL. You're talking about youth football, you're talking about high school football, you're talking about college football. It's one thing for people to look at pro players and say, look, they know at some level there's a risk here. They're taking it. They're getting paid for it. There's some sort of contractual arrangement. They're adults. It's quite another thing for parents to look at this sport and say, I want my kids to go do something that has a significant risk of brain damage. That is the thing that the NFL, I believe, is most scared of. That's the actual threat to its business model over time. It may not be the ethics of fans. It's the ethics of parents. And it's the ethics of who is the risk actually on.
I want to look at how they might address that in an ethical way, if it's possible. Mark in Dayton, Ohio. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. It's Mark. My last name's Diffenderfer, if that's acceptable. I have suffered several brain concussions, not from playing in the NFL, not for playing any professional sport, but I've hit my head one too many times.
Be careful, Mark. Take it easy.
Know. I know, but my sister, who is a nurse, is concerned because there does... I'm not the same person I was 15 years ago. And instead of going to therapy every day and seeing my doctor once every 3 months, we're still trying to figure out whether it's because of how many hits I've taken to the head, and I don't play NFL.
So when you see the NFL players out there taking plenty of hits, what are you thinking, Mark?
I say go Browns, but at the same time, I understand personally what that means. I have times of confusion. And it's because I've hit my head once too many times. Just want that. It's that last concussion that makes the difference.
Paying the price without even being on the field. I appreciate your call, Mark. Another, Canton, Ohio, Marcia. Marcia, you're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
You're in the middle of the city where the Hall of Fame is, where everything revolves. People don't understand the consequences of putting their kids out there in their little uniforms. I see them all around my neighborhood. It's such a big thing here, and it's embarrassing, and it's even cost me friends.
Why? How? I mean, it's. I can vouch that as a young man, it was fun to play, Marcia.
If I talk to people my age about the consequences, they talk about how much they enjoy being with their father and watching the games together, even women. And parents, mothers, are proud because their kids are out there playing.
And if you say these are gladiators out there, we're like ancient Romans?
That's why I've lost some friends. I consider it kind of a training for macho men, you know, for getting on the field and going to the wars. I mean, that's why Army and Navy games are so popular. It's just like acting out this aggression. And people don't mind the suffering. They enjoy it. I mean, we have cases of PTSD from all these injuries happening to the poor guys that go in the field. And now we got women that want to go. I just don't understand it.
Marcia, we've got it. I appreciate your call. One more, and I'll take it to Kevin Clark and Patrick Ruby, David Gray Edwards, calling from Nashville. David, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. I was telling your screener, and very quickly, for those of us who strapped up, for those of us who have played the game for years, you played from as a child. Actually, I didn't start until my 10th grade year of high school.
Did you go all the way to the Did you go all the way to the NFL, David?
And finished 7 years in the NFL. It ended in 2009.
Okay.
For those of us who strap up, young guys like that, it's not about violence. It's not about glorifying violence. Really, the game began with me, was with my cousins who played in our grandmother's front yard. My grandmother lived in a trailer in Alabama. We played the game in my grandmother's front yard. And you just love the game, the finesse of the game, the camaraderie, and the skill of pitting yourself against another human being, you know, and trying to come out and see who's best. As far as the injuries, and I hear the word thrown about so much as far as the pain and suffering, Tom, there are so many guys who come out of this game with so much life left ahead of them. Mm-hmm. Myself, I'm 38 years old now. I'm happily married, three daughters. There's not a day that goes by that I'm not grateful that I was able to play the game that put me in the position that I am now to be able to give my family the life that they have. And it's just really hard to hear the disparagement from people who've never strapped up, who've never put the pads on.
David, what teams did you play with, if I may ask, David? Which teams?
I played 4 years with the New York Jets and Tennessee Titans, and then also 3 years with the New York Jets before. And I did take an injury settlement. I tore my rotator cuff in preseason of 2009, that doesn't leave a bad taste in my mouth about the league. I mean, it is what it is. We all go in there knowing what we can do. I could tear my ACL. Playing golf, you know, I could do anything. So it's a thing that everybody goes into open eyes. There's no, blinders on as far as you're slamming your head up against other guys. I mean, I weigh at my heaviest than when I play 202, and I get hit by guys who weigh 300 pounds. Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. You get picked up and you go up again.
David Gray Edwards, our time grows shorter, but we've got it, and I'm glad, very glad that you called. Patrick Ruby, here's a former player. He's strapped on, as he says, all the gear, went out and played. Would you deny him the joy and the money and the satisfaction? Yeah, he got beaten up a little bit, but he's okay and doesn't regret it.
I mean, I think that's good. I'm glad it's had a good outcome with it. I don't think pointing out the inherent violence and the physical costs of football, which, by the way, again, we all pay. It's not just that people that get hurt pay it. You know, we're all paying this health cost. I mean, brain damage is essentially the industrial pollution of the sport. I don't think that's disparaging the sport in any way. I think it's just sort of pointing out what's actually happening. In terms of what he's saying, I do think there's also, again, a distinction between you're looking at grown adults. So we could look at boxing, for instance, right? I think we've sort of made ethical peace in society, the fact that adults can choose to box. At some level, they know there's a serious physical risk, and they take it. But it's completely different when we're talking about children. And also when we're talking about school-sponsored activities. That's the other big ethical and moral question that hasn't been asked yet, is why do high schools and colleges want to necessarily be involved in the business that can produce brain damage when their whole mission is to cultivate and nurture young brains? We're not there yet as a society, but at some point, if the science keeps coming out the way it's been coming out, we're going to get to that point, and they're going to have to ask those questions, and all of us are going to have to ask them.
Joe in Spokane, Washington. Joe, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. The point I wanted to make is regarding the rhetoric around the conversation. There's been a consistent parallel drawn between gladiator sports in ancient Rome and the NFL. I think that's a little inept. Gladiators did actually do extreme violence in the arena, and people craved that. And I think at least the NFL is a sublimation of that violence. So it's not comparable to gladiator sport, I don't think.
So, I mean, everybody gets, you know, it's not spears and swords, and totally grant that. But if it costs men their minds later in their lives, is that a full-on sublimation, Joe?
I think the sublimation is of the extreme violence. I think the cost to the brain
is a probabilistic function. There's a probability that someone will lose some part of their brain, but that's not the point of football. The point of football is not to get hit in the head repeatedly. There's the rah-rah stuff that some people get into, but I think what your previous caller pointed out is there's also in football a lot of complexity, a lot of the intellectual side
sure.
that you find. And I think if we underplay that and we kind of simply say it's just a rah-rah brutality sport, I don't think that's a completely accurate representation of the totality
All right.
of
yeah.
why people are interested in the sport.
Yeah, I'll take that. I hear that. It's the comparison's inapt, says Joe in Spokane, Kevin. You know, they were out for blood. They were out for death. And here, it's violent, but it's also very athletic, and there's a lot of smarts involved. Different deal.
I think that it's two different things. I think there are people who watch it because there's fantasy football and gambling and office pools, and those people are just sort of looking for the scoring, mm-hmm. the chess match, whatever it is. And then I think there is a certain percentage who just love the physicality of it. I mean, if you've ever seen a kickoff return where one of the coverage guys just nails
Kaboom.
A guy in the backfield, and everybody says boom with the hit.
Mm-hmm.
That suggests that, you know, at least of the 80,000 people, at least 40,000 of them are very, very excited about this. So, yes, there are people who are going to see the macho stuff on parade. I think it's the NFL at this point has a mixture of fans. Again, you know, they're inassailable at this point because of the first thing I mentioned, which is everyone has their office pool, everyone has their gambling or fantasy team. But there is definitely an element where people want to see violence, and it does, you know, it is as close to gladiators as we're going to get in 2015.
And the spectacle rolls on with all the skill and all the money and all the violence. Kevin Clark with Wall Street Journal, thank you very much for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Patrick Ruby, Vice Sports, thank you, Patrick. This is On Point.